Well, sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
Look, I don't have to do this.
You don't have any choice.
I'm trying to help you people. Now, why won't you accept that?
It's in our DNA. You have to do what old man says.
What makes you such a threat?
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power, Ray.
Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Bluewater, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
Grandfather, teach me the ways of the old, so that I may remember who I am.
Oseo, Ginli, this is Will Bluewater coming to you from Oklahoma Native American Church's Prophecy Keepers Radio. Our guest this evening is Chief Philip Scott. He's of mixed ancestry. He's walked the Native path for over 30 years, learning from and sanctioned by traditional medicine holy people, tribal spiritual leaders, shamans, and elders from several indigenous cultures. He's a Sun Dancer, been interviewed both nationally and internationally in TV and newspapers, and his life and experiences have been featured in journals and books. And he directs and teaches programs at Ancestral Voice Institute in Northern California. It was founded in 1994. And mics are open, and Mark the Badger's with us. How you doing, Chief Philip?
I'm well, sir. It's wonderful to be here with you. I'm looking out over, atop Mount Tamalpais in Marin County in the San Francisco Bay Area right now. I just completed a ceremony in observance of the spring equinox. So got a beautiful view of the Pacific Ocean and the Bolinas Headlands, and it's a beautiful day here in San Francisco Bay Area, so it's a real honor to be with you, both of you, today.
Yeah, I was looking at your calendar and saw that you were busy earlier today, and I would get right into it. Mark, I'd like to do a reading on you, and if you'll give him your full birth date, we'll give him 1 minute to look it up.
Sure, it's the 18th of July, 1963.
July 18th, 1963.
And we'll play a short message here. Hang on. Hi, friends. This is Will Bluewater. If you have been listening to our program for long, then you know that Mark the Badger Borcherding does a Mayan birth reading for each of our interview guests. Mark suggested that he give away a free reading for each donation of $20 or more to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a ministry of Oklahoma Native American Church, or the White Roots of Peace. So please support Prophecy Keepers Radio by making your free will offering at nativeamericanchurch.us, and you'll receive this gift reading. If you choose to make a recurring donation, once you've received your own reading, you can give readings away as free gifts. So why not head over to nativeamericanchurch.us and make an offering right now. Hope to be talking with you soon. Bye now. Yeah, it sounds pretty bold, but we usually start out by saying this Mayan birth reading will tell you, probably give you an idea why you do what you do, or at least confirm your suspicions. I know it was a real shock for me when Robert Three Eagles introduced me to these, and he learned about them from a Mayan elder. And but what do you think, Mark?
Well, his birth in the traditional Mayan day count was on a day 7 Simi, which is in the center of the Ahau cycle of the sun. So it's the balancing portion of that particular cycle. So that would kind of tell us that a little bit right there about him, about him maybe balancing things, energy of the sun, and things that that have to do with, you know, a change or transformation of things, catalyzing things, kind of sometimes even a testing of things, a testing of power and energy and how to catalyze it and make it do things, and especially things with change or transformation. Sometimes in Mayan, they just say death, but, you know, people in our culture get scared when you say that. They look at it as just a change. So they look at death as kind of the seed of life. It also has to do with knowledge and wisdom of elders, that particular semiglyph. And especially sometimes people with this have an ability to do a communication, you know, across, you know, the veil or the dimensions in scientific terms or into the other realms. So he may have found that maybe he had some talent in possibly doing those things even when he was younger, even, you know, very young, as a child even, maybe. So that's in the traditional Mayan day count. We're going to switch over and look at it, his birth, from the sixth sun Vulcan viewpoint of the next world cycle. And it's going to have three components: a forward flow of time, backward flow of time. The forward flow of time was what our senses detect. Our senses cannot detect the backward flow, although our psychic senses can detect the backward flow. And that's sometimes why psychics get mixed up, because sometimes they're on the backward flow of time instead of the forward. And in the third part of this reading on it will be where these two time flows come together in a unity or a bridge. So we'll go to the forward flow time, the way we normally look at time first. And his is on is about, again, that thing we were talking about earlier about catalyzing things, causing things to happen. You know, as Ross Perot said he was like the little grit of sand that would irritate the oyster and catalyze and pearl, cause a pearl to be made. So it might be something like that. This one also has a lot to do with family. A strong thing here about pulling everything together, a oneness or a unity. And especially when it's working along the paths of intuition, abundance, opening up new pathways and things. This particular glyph is also one that the majority, I'd say over 50% of the white buffalo calves have been born on this particular glyph. It's also called a storm glyph. So in the Lakota, it would relate to the thunder beings.
That's right.
I can't remember. It's like Wiki-an or something like that. I forget how you pronounce it. But,
Wakia. Thunder Nation.
It's going to relate them with white buffalo to you, and this is on the forward flow time. So again, this goes back maybe all the way back to your birth, maybe even before your birth. And so it, those things brought you in right from the ground, hit the ground about causing things to happen, goodness of things, family, uniting things. Those are very strong aspects. On the backward flow, the other way that we normally don't see, coming from the next world cycle into ours, it's talking more about, and this is things that may have been showing up more recently in your life. Usually we say back around 1997, 98 going forward, maybe a little bit before or after that, but, you know, not since your birth, but a little bit more in recent history. And it's talking about an ability of yours to influence things, to strengthen wisdom, opening up pathways again. Things here with this wisdom and opening pathways that deal with challenges of duality, polarity, or whatever you want, how to kind of get things balanced, right?
Mm-hmm.
The opposites and getting working and balanced out. And it has a energy here that helps you to do that with just artwork, creating things, actually a lot of things that power in the larger cycles here that have to do with action, making mm-hmm. things happen, just getting down to the nitty-gritty and getting things done, elbow
sure.
grease. But in the background, in another little slightly smaller cycle, it's bringing in not just action, your normal elbow grease and just doing the dirty work, but an aspect here of mysticism and mystical power ability that's coming in there. Let me see if I can find out a little bit. I'm going to look at this cycle and see if I can find out more about that, because maybe there's something there. Give me just a second. Okay, yeah, that's tying, that's tying in to your, also to your dreams, intuition, things like that, just your spiritual sense, spiritual connection, right? And you may find along with that something with an eagle having to do with that somewhere in the mm-hmm. background somewhere. There may be some eagle energy or power that's helping with that dreaming, intuition, and ability to just look at things. And it's also a unifying or universal is the word, aspect to it. Very powerful thing,
mm-hmm.
you know. So that may mean, you know, like we're saying about your bridging realms earlier, this unification
mm-hmm.
that we may be working on or guiding to do may not be just confined to our physical reality. You may be able to bring
mm-hmm.
in other realities, bring them in and use those to help with that, with your intuition, possibly having some, you know, powerful dreams and stuff, and or vision,
mm-hmm.
a vision, or any kind of thing like that that is working in that realm to bridge this realm with the other realms is going to be
mm-hmm.
a pretty powerful thing for you.
Mm-hmm.
Where these two forward and backward time flow come together, you have the glyph of Ok, which is the Mayan. It's the dog glyph. It's the partner glyph with Quetzalcoatl, Xoatl.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the dog of the underworld, kind of like the Egyptian Anubis. Xoatl
mm-hmm.
Helps guide people through and travel through the underworld and move from one realm to the next as something's being born. So you have to go through the underworld to get to the next day, to the next world cycle, you know, to whatever it is that's next. So,
yeah.
You know, Xoatl will show up with you if you you went to a cave, you know, or let's say you went to even something kind of like a cave, like a sweat lodge,
mm-hmm.
Anything like that where you're kind of under the ground or somewhat buried or something, you know,
mm-hmm.
that's going to be a good thing for you to balance these two time flows and pull all these energies together and powers and stuff and get that guidance of Xoatl to move through the underworld. So what that's telling me is all this thing you're doing on unification and bridging things and realms and all that, one of the purposes of it is could be to move us from one cycle to the next, to bridge,
mm-hmm.
go across that bridge. So you might find people are attracted to you is they're trying to figure out, how do I go from what the Hopi say we're in the fourth world to the next world, the fifth world, or the Aztec Mayans say from the fifth sun to the sixth sun. And so you may find that people are just naturally gravitating towards you for you to kind of help them do that and share wisdom and teachings and stuff with them, for them also to be able to come around and help you create a community, a harmony, a balance, and a unity of people. And and that'll cause some things to be born. That's what it seems to be showing.
Nice. Well, very accurate reading.
Yeah, it is. It's really amazing. So, well, why don't you take us back about 30 years and tell us how spirit activated? How'd you figure it out?
Well, actually, I'll take you back even farther. My first medicine dream started when I was 6 years old. So he was talking about dreams. So my first dreams of visitations with the ancestors started when I was six, and showed that the dream time was the real time. And after that, when I was seven, I had a near-death experience, and it involved a sledding accident. And I was jettisoned into the other world, and then was pulled, literally yanked back into my body. As a consequence of that, I was able to see the ancestor spirits in ordinary time and space, not just in my dreams. And so after that, I began being taught in my dreams from them. And then when I was 17, I made a formal commitment to walk this road of life, this native way. And dreams have always been a very important part of this medicine, in this way. And some other accurate points that you brought up is that I've been struck three times by lightning. So I have a relationship with the Thunder Beings.
Wow.
And, so I have an intimate relationship with them. And then you talked about the late 90s. And so in 1999, February, my beloved wife made her journey home while visiting some relations on the res. And that kind of jettisoned me on an odyssey to explore the medicine of grief in great intimacy and detail. And so I sought out a lot of medicine people to help me with my own journey of bereavement. And it's been very powerful that way. And obviously, I've been sun dancing since 92 consecutively, and I've been a member of a Native American church for the past two decades as well. So I know his reading was quite compelling, quite accurate. I obviously sought out medicine people, and I apprenticed with them, minimum 10 years before I was granted the blessing and the permission and the sanction to be able to conduct these ceremonies, which is part of the bridge, that he's talking about. I really believe that in this world, the antidote to a lot of human suffering is through indigenous medicine ways, through ceremonial practices, legitimate practices that are being conducted in the proper way. And, I've seen tremendous healing take place through people's participation, in this way of life. And I think it's vital for our survival as a species, to be able to remember these old ways. And part of my medicine, I feel, is also to preserve and protect these ancient ways and practices so that future generations can benefit as well. And, you mentioned the dog, and, the dog is a part of the Heoka medicine, the contrary medicine that connects with thunder beings. So, the reading is quite accurate. I had a reading before from a traditional Mayan elder about the time of my wife's passing, And again, he read me like a book as well. I had prognosticated certain things that later came true. So, it's a really powerful way of communion with the Creator and the Earth and the ancestors. And being of mixed ancestry, I think I already serve as a bridge. And yeah, sometimes a little grain of sand that can be an irritant that allows that pearl to grow and to shine. So, that's kind of a Reader's Digest synopsis of my journey thus far. So thank you for that reading.
Well, we're hoping to hear the National Geographic version now.
I'm happy to oblige, yeah. So what else would you like to know? Do you have any specific questions?
Yeah, you got any questions, Mark?
Well, it's just, with his mixing and his thing, kind of, how's it going for him? And, since probably, like he said, his wife passed over, and that kind of probably redirected him a little bit. So kind of what happened, and, where are you going, and with what you're doing, tell people, what you're trying to accomplish and how things are going for you, and anything else that you think that they might be interested in.
All right. Yeah, so if anything, obviously I'd been already on the path and dancing and doing service to people and building community. And obviously I've been endeavoring to build community for the past 20-plus years. And in fact, my institute celebrated its 20th anniversary in the Bay Area back in 2014. And, so Creator just put me on this road, and when I first started dancing, they came to me during the Sundance in a vision and told me I needed to create a center that was involved in the preservation and protection and the respectful dissemination of indigenous practices. And first I said, I think you got the wrong guy, but they said, no, you are the one. And my wife, had just met her not too long before that, and she was also instrumental in helping to dream. At that point, was the center. The institute came a little bit later, but so I began traveling the world and bringing this medicine to the people, which I believe is vital, for our survival as a species, to help us reconnect with the earth. I think we have forgotten our intimate relationship to our mother, and we've forgotten our relationship to the ancestors that always walk with us. And so part of the purpose and mission that I believe that I have is to shepherd people back toward the sacred and toward an intimate communion with the earth and the ancestors and the Creator. And so, that's what I've been doing. And, I think it's challenging in this world nowadays. I mean, things have radically changed, and I think it's very challenging. I regard community as an experiment. People have forgotten how to be tribal and how to get along. And so, with the technologies that we have, sometimes they can be very effective tools for communication, but they can also serve to divide. People are separated. So it's really using the best of the technology to help unify. I mean, you talked about unification there. Yeah, so for me, a big piece of that is endeavoring to be an instrument in the relief of suffering in this world, because all of us carry wounds. All of us experience suffering and pain as a result of this human journey. Impermanence is the truth of this world. I think, if anything, the unexpected passing of my wife through a vehicular accident on the res really underscored the truth of death, and it's nothing to be afraid of. It's just a part of the balance of this journey that we're on. And so, to help people make peace with that inevitable demise, and really to therefore live and love passionately with great purpose, to help people remember their original instructions. I think we all come here with a gift, that is not just for us to serve ourselves, but to serve all of our relations. And oftentimes, I think in this world, there's a fundamental forgetting of what our mission and purpose is. And so these, you know, the vehicle of ceremony can help people remember, help them to remember what they're here to do for the benefit of all of us, but also help to remember to put ourselves back together again, not only individually, but collectively, to be part of something bigger than ourselves. And so that has been certainly my purpose and mission, which is to travel the world and help people remember who they are and what they're here to do. Because when we don't fulfill our original instructions, when we're not doing what the Creator, you know, the Dreamer has dreamed for us, then all of us suffer. And I think the suffering that we're seeing on such a massive global scale is a reflection of that internalized suffering, you know, and as well as the forgetting that I spoke of. And all the violence in the world, for me, is just a result of the violence that we wage internally upon ourselves, you know, the insidious judgments and criticisms that we have about ourselves because we're not coming from a place of love and respect for who we are, the Creator, and the Earth has fashioned us to be. And, you know, I see this disconnection in our youth. A lot of the work that I do is also rites of passage. So, you know, besides, you know, with the spirits that I work with, you know, because they do the work, I don't. You know, I just want to be a humble, empty instrument. You know, in the beginning of your program, you know, I remember John Trudell was sharing. Want to kind of give an acknowledgement of him. He made his journey not long ago. And, you know, in that excerpt from Thunderheart, he talked about power. You know, and I think that individuals, you know, human beings don't have power. We have responsibility. You know, we have responsibility to become instruments through which the powers of the universe and the Creator and the Earth can act for the benefit of the whole.
Hope.
So, you know, the work that I do, you know, is really to be a humble instrument, and because the spirits do the doctoring, you know, and my elders and my teachers, mentors, have, you know, they provided me with the framework through ceremonial protocol, you know, because I don't believe in my world the kind of vernacular that I use is that also individuals, ceremonial leaders, we don't hold space. You know, counselors don't hold space. We occupy space, but we witness the journey of that individual through their healing process. But it's the ancestors and the Creator that are the container. So the practitioner invokes the ancestors and the Creator and the Earth so that they can create the container where the alchemy of healing can take place. And so, you know, that's the gift that the mentors and my teachers have conferred upon me, is, you know, to provide me with a ceremonial structural protocol, like a skeleton, if you will. Because, you know, every ceremony is different, every healing is unique, and so it's about being present to listen to what the ancestors intend, what the Creator and the Earth intend, or that individual, or that group, or that couple, whoever comes to seek out, you know, healing at the altars that I serve. And so that's what I see, you know. So rites of passage are another critical piece of our human journey that is often forgotten. You know, I do work with the youth, and sometimes I go into schools or go into even universities. I used to be a university professor, and I would teach in universities, and I would ask the students on a show of hands, you know, was there any rites of passage, you know, were they brought into the world at birth with song and celebration and prayer and ceremony? Were they, you know, when a young girl has her first bleeding or first moon time, do the grandmothers and the mothers celebrate that arrival into young womanhood through ceremony? or when a young man, you know, in his mid-teens or so, began to notice changes in his body. Did the grandfathers or his fathers take him out into the woods and train him how to be a man? And chances are most people, they never raise their hands because they never had that experience. And for me, I see these rites of passage as the threshold through which we pass as human beings that give us the opportunity to know that others have walked the journey before, and that it's signposts and guideposts that help us to be able to navigate that journey is, you know, in addition to marriage, which is obviously, you know, a ceremony that's done, but then the other side of that is when a woman moves into her sacred crone time, when the blood is stored in the body and no longer given to the earth, or when a man is asked to move into his eldership to serve in council as well, you know. And for me, these rites of passage are really critical, you know. And of course, naturally, the final rite of passage, which is not just for the individual but for the community and the family as well, but is death itself, you know, when that person drops their body and returns back to where they came from. You know, this is all a part of our journey here on this earth, and it helps us to be able to move and navigate effectively through this world. You know, and so building community is a critical piece of that. You know, that we have not only a ceremonial container, but we have a container of allies, of people who love and respect and care about us. Know, to know that we're not alone here. And I think there's such a emphasis in our culture upon individuality, you know, being an individual and being independent. But I believe independence is an illusion. I think we are interdependent. And you know, not only do we rely upon this earth for our sustenance, food and water, clothing, shelter, etc., but, you know, we need each other. And it breaks my heart to see the way that we often treat each other with this unkindness and this disrespect when it is, we are literally mitak, we oyasin, we are all related, you know, not just in our human relations, but also with the plants and the animals, you know, the elementals, earth, air, fire, water. Those are our first elders. Those are our first teachers. You know, grandfather, fire, grandmother, water. I mean, this is, you know, when we say that in when we address them in that way, we understand our relationship to them. We understand that you know, we're not the Venus of creation, as some of the Western cultures tend to profess, but we're actually the grandchildren. We're the youngest ones on this planet, and therefore we have the most to learn. So we look to our elders. We look to the elementals, the earth, air, fire, water, which are living, sentient beings. And we look to the plants who came next, and we look to the animals, all of whom have medicine for us and can help us on our journey when we're humble enough to listen and to begin to remember the language which we once spoke but have divorced ourselves from as a consequence of, I believe, our human hubris, which has gotten in the way and allows us to disconnect, you know, and creates this illusion of independence when what we really need in this world is interdependence. And we need to work together in solidarity, you know, so that we can all remember what we're here to do and to ensure that seven generations will survive of all of Iri nations, seven generations and beyond. So I think that's the work that I'm compelled to continue to do, and just to continue to be of service any way, shape, or form, however I'm called. And I travel the world, and I feel really deeply grateful to the Creator and the Earth and the ancestors with whom I associate for giving me an opportunity to travel and to share these messages, which I believe, again, are vital for our survival as a species and to ensure the survival of the earth and all of our relations upon her.
Well, let me ask you if I don't know how far back you go. I haven't done the math, but
Did you ever have a chance, say, from the mid-'80s until the late 90s to meet or listen to Madbury Anderson or Rolling Thunder, because they did quite a bit of speaking in the Bay Area?
So I never met Mad Bear. I did actually meet Doug Boyd,
who wrote
a book about Rolling Thunder.
And Mad Bear, yeah.
And Mad Bear as well, yeah. I read actually both of Doug's books. I never had the privilege of, it's an interesting story. I was cognizant that Rolling Thunder would come to the Bay Area. I never met him directly, however. It was very interesting that when I was here in the 80s, I would spend my Sundays at the Marine Mammal Center, and which was a sanctuary for pinnipeds, for seals, rescue and rehabilitation of marine mammals. And I was on the day crew, and so I'd have to get up very early in the morning. And it was in the summer months, and it was sweltering. We had a drought, and one morning I woke up very early to drive out to the Marin Headland, where the facility is, and it was a torrential downpour, it was kind of strange because we hadn't had any rain at all, and I was actually then called to rescue a seal down the coast, so I drove with another volunteer to Moss Landing down farther south, and then beyond that back to Monterey and Santa Cruz. And the weather was quite stormy for the whole duration, but after we successfully were able to capture a seal that was stranded and infirmed and bring it back to the facility. On the way back, one of the most glorious sunsets I'd ever seen emerged, and the storm broke. And later that evening, a friend called me and informed me that Rolling Thunder was in town and did a ceremony.
Yep.
I can't say that I met him directly, but I definitely was touched by his medicine. And interestingly enough, I would travel with my wife and my community members. We would drive to South Dakota, where I was first sun dancing. And on our way, we'd have to pass through Carlin, Nevada, route to South Dakota. And so I was driving along the road, and I knew that Rolling Thunder resided in Carlin. But one year in particular, I was really compelled to, literally, it's almost like the steering wheel, pulled us off the side of the road to take the exit to Carlin. And I didn't know where he lived, but it's almost if the car just kind of guided us there. And so I stopped in front of his home. And apparently his wife and his children came out, and it informed us not long ago that he had made his journey, he had passed. And so we obviously expressed our condolences, and then she told me that there was a particular mountain range that was very sacred to him. And so myself, my wife, and community, we traveled to this area, and we did a ceremony for him. And while we were in the midst of the ceremony, we were going to do a Chinupa Wakana sacred pipe ceremony for him. And during the ceremony, one lone dark rain cloud came, and because the whole sky was completely clear except for this one dark cloud, and it came and it hovered right over us. And right at the conclusion of the pipe ceremony, or the Chinupa ceremony, there was just a slight, gentle drizzle of rain. So we knew that he had been with us.
Must have been like the spring of 97. It's really interesting. Matt, I think it was back in 72, 73, 74, maybe Mark can remember. They had a big gathering in the Salt Lake Valley, and in August, Salt Lake never gets any rain, and Mad Bear said that, well, he made some remarks, but he said, to testify the truth of what I just told you, he said, beginning tomorrow and for 3 days, there's going to be a light female rain. And he left town, and it puckered up and rained for 3 days. It never rained in Salt Lake for 3 days.
So. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I was in Africa, once in Botswana, visiting with the Bushmen, Room Bushmen in the Kalahari, and they had experienced a serious drought, and we had spent time in their huts and talking story and sharing. You know, they had very similar practices. You know, I practice primitive technology and make fire from scratch, etc. So they have some hand drills and bow drills as well. You know, so it was really beautiful to see the commonality of indigenous practices. We would share story. I have a native flute that I play. So I brought my flute, and they'd bring out their finger pianos, and we would play music together and talk story and around the fire every night. They invited us to participate in their trance dance, which is a very powerful ceremony of healing and medicine as well. It's a night ceremony versus the sun dance, which is obviously a daytime ceremony. But that's their way of their hospital, so they doctor people. So the elders, word had spread that I was in their village, and so some of the elders from some of the neighboring villages came to hear me share the story of White Buffalo Calf Woman and how she brought the sacred pipe to the people. So in the course of the sharing, I asked them if they would be interested in receiving some rain. They were obviously ecstatic about that prospect because it had been so dry. As I sang the traditional song to load the chanupa, the sacred pipe, as I began blessing the people, I started singing the thunder song. Then the thunder beings came from all four directions. And as I blessed the people with the stem of the chanupa, there was just a gentle rain. It started to drizzle, and it got progressively greater and stronger. And after I put the chanupa away, the storm came, and it was wonderful to see the children and the elders and just laughing and celebrating in the rain as these life-giving waters were brought back to the area.
Outstanding.
Beautiful.
Hey, we've got a caller. Are you willing to take a question or two?
Sure.
Yeah. Area code 318. What's your name?
Yari.
Did you say Yari?
You
or? We can hear you.
Yeah. Yeah. Y A K R Y.
Okay. Yeah. You got a question or a comment?
Do they have any opinion on the stones in New Mexico called the Las Lunas Decalog Stone inscription?
Can you repeat that again? About what the stone where?
The Lunas, like Las Lunas, New Mexico, Decalog Stone inscription. There's a star inscription at the site with the solar eclipse, and if you bring the constellations back to match the star inscription, it dates to 8,000 B.C.,
I've never seen that, so I really am not able to comment on that. I have
never
looked at that.
Also known as the Ten Commandments stone, because it's a proto.
Yeah, it's written in Phoenician and Paleo Hebrew, which Hebrew came from the Phoenician language.
I cannot say that I've ever visited that site. I've been to Chaco Canyon quite frequently, seen the pictographs and the petroglyphs there. But I have not been to the area that your caller mentioned.
Oh, okay. Well, Red Elk, if you knew Red Elk before he passed, moved on, he said it was still held as sacred ground today by some Native tribes.
Well, I believe actually that all this ground in North America and throughout the world is still sacred and holy. So yes, I mean if there are inscriptions there, and you know.
Caller, are you familiar with some of the stones that kind of had some, Hebrewish and other kind of inscriptions that were up in, the Illinois area, like Burroughs Cave and stuff like that? Have you ever heard of that?
And here in Tennessee.
Yes, I've heard of that. Those stones also, I find it interesting. My great-grandmother was a full-blooded Y-A-H-O-O-S-K-I-N. If you ever never heard of that tribe. And
yeah.
the reason skin translates so good into English is because it was actually a sign word.
Mm-hmm.
And the double O is wah, Yah-wah, and
yeah.
Sign your skin. Now, how much better can it get than that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a connection. I looked at the Native tribes' names all across this nation, and you can find what they call the Tetragrammaton in their names, the Kiowa and like that.
Yeah, they're all permutations of the Hebrew name of God, and there's a bunch of them.
A whole bunch of them.
You can read more about that at AmericanCherokeeAssociation.com. Quite a bit of information about that sort of thing on that website.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it came to me that when the Spanish came here, they beat them in the head and told them to quit speaking their language, and they gave them a religion. What was the religion they gave them? Iesus. The Iesusites, the Jesusites. You got that part of it, didn't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I.e., in reference to Zeus, the head god of the Greeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's interesting,
yeah,
isn't
it? Essentially, not just the Spaniards, but basically all, colonizing nations came over and attempted to assimilate and alter the cultural legacy and identity of indigenous nations.
That's exactly right. In the last usurpation in the preamble to the Declaration of Independence, it says, they're talking about the king, he has endeavored to bring on those savages on our
mm-hmm.
frontier. Stop right there. If I come to your front lawn and stand on it, is it my front lawn now?
Yeah.
Whose known rule of warfare is to kill old men, women, and children indiscriminately. You do, and then they did exactly to them what they said they were doing. That's what you do. You accuse the enemy of doing exactly what you're going to do to them.
Yeah.
Right. So if we look actually at the historical precedent here, right, so you had individuals that were fleeing religious persecution, i.e. the pilgrims, and they came to North America, to this island of Turtle Island, and they began to perpetrate the same kind of violence upon the indigenous inhabitants here as they were subjected to. And that's unfortunately the legacy of intergenerational wounding, right? That actually all human beings are subject to, right? That we tend to do what's been done to us. And that's why it requires us to literally wake up so that we can examine our patterns, right? Through ceremony and through self-reflection, so that we're not continuing to perpetrate the violence internally and externally, but that it can stop. Because as the great law of peace, we talked about the Declaration of Independence, so which, a lot of that and a lot of the historical documents of the quote-unquote founding fathers were co-opted from the Iroquois Six Nations law of peace. So,
Yeah, do you, Do you know why they
be able to? We need to be able to examine with great scrutiny and honesty our patterning, so that we do not have to perpetrate this upon our children and future generations.
Well, this
exactly.
is getting back to a conversation I had earlier with a friend of mine today about. He was asking me about the world cycles and those things that Hopi and Amaya said. And, you know, they say that what happens is we approach the end of the cycle. Really what causes us to fall apart and collapse and everything is we have just massive greed and corruption. We completely disregard the laws of the Creator, just go off and do whatever the hell we want. They said another sign that things are going wrong is your military starts to take over everything. That's a bad sign. But, see, and then you get warnings. And when the Hopi say, when you don't listen to warnings, Creator tells the guys at the polls to let go a little bit, and your weather, this, that, and other changes, and you get whacked around a little bit. If you don't listen to that, then he tells them to let go completely. And that's kind of where we're at right now. That's in the works. And but the thing is see, when the next world starts, you know, it's obvious. Everybody says, wow, we just got whacked big time. We better change. And most of the people that are causing trouble might be gone anyway. So my friend and I were asking, well, what happens? You know, according to Hopi, you know, this is our fourth world. So, you know, three times we've been through the whacking, and every time we do okay at the beginning, and as time wears on, we just seem to kind of lose it. So, you know, what we have to figure out is how do we over time maintain a lot of our cultures and each of our things. They have things. They have commandments, the rules of the Creator, they have all these things, and when we first start our cycle, we're gung-ho, we're doing the right thing, and, you know, after 1,000 years, we start to lose track, and we get off base, and then we start going nuts and attacking each other and doing all kinds of garbage, you know, how do we maintain?
That's the forgetting.
Yeah, I think we're trying to learn how to maintain that and keep it working the whole time and never fall back and be vigilant and never let this thing sneak back into us and sneak up on us, so we're just repeating the same thing over and over.
Sleeping, right? We become asleep rather than dreaming awake.
Do you know why Ishii would not tell anybody his name? You know who Ishii is, right?
Sure. California native here in San Francisco Bay Area.
Yeah. You know why he wouldn't tell anybody his name?
No, I do not.
Okay. They didn't name their children at birth. Did my phone go out?
You're okay.
You're still
okay. They waited to get the message from the Creator and named them by their nature. And that name was not to go outside of the tribe, so that you could not be fooled by any man that the Creator was calling you.
That's actually a common practice amongst many indigenous nations, is that they wait so that the child's nature can be revealed and so that the name that is conferred aligns with the child's medicine. So, not just Ishii's tribe, but many, many tribes with whom I'm familiar, you know, have a very similar practice.
It gets pretty simple. If you believe that you go on after you die, then if you believe that you existed before you were even conceived, then do you think that Creator said, hey, you come here, go forth? No. You had a name, man.
In certain cultures, your name is going to change as you age and grow because your medicine can change.
Well, in some cultures, too, your name, like in Maya culture, your name would be the day you were born on, one of your names. You don't just have one name, but one of your names would be the day in the Mayan calendar you're born on would become one of your names.
So I've had four names in my journey thus far. And interestingly, in your reading, your Mayan reading, you talk about the eagle. And actually, My first cycle of sun dancing was eagle dancing as a part of that. So kind of tied in with what you said earlier about the Mayan calendar, your reading of myself. So, yeah, eagle medicine is definitely a part of the medicine that I carry. So,
we're trying to figure out, I think, right now, you know, how to get through and how to learn from what's been happening. And, you know, we're already back in the middle of the mess again, getting ready to probably go through purification again. And we're trying to, you know, some of us are saying, well, okay, well, we've gone through this before. What do we do? How do we not go around and repeat mm-hmm. this again, repeat this cycle over and over and over? You know, let's graduate. Mm-hmm. And let's don't funk again. And mm-hmm. and I think it's it first starts as a desire of people to want to accomplish that and to come together and to mm-hmm. heal. And a key component of a healing is really to look at all the problems and things that have been done that are wrong and across the whole mm-hmm. world and say, mm-hmm. okay, well, this is what happened. But we also are willing to step back and say, okay, we can forgive these people what has been done. We don't condone mm-hmm. the actions, but let's move beyond this and let's try to figure out how to pull together, heal mm-hmm. all of ourselves. Each of mm-hmm. us look at each other, look at each level from the individual, then to the family, then to the mm-hmm. tribe, then to the city, then to the nation, then to the planet, and work it from the bottom up, bottom, top mm-hmm. down, work it simultaneously both ways. And, mm-hmm. and people, I think, want to do this. This is what his work is about and a lot of the guests that come on the show. And so, and mm-hmm. if we do that, we'll really have accomplished a major, major thing. And I think
that's the ruthless honesty piece. Right? We've got to be able to look at our patterns and our wounds. We have to be willing to forgive one another. I mean, the reality is that, you know, and there has to be restitution. I think that, you know, one thing that troubles me, you know, I travel all over the world and connect with other indigenous nations. And, you know, I'd have to say that here in North America, there is still a campaign of very subtle and sometimes blatant genocide against indigenous nations still. And so there's not a willingness to look at the history of this nation and to right the wrong, to say, listen, you know, we have not treated you with the fundamental respect and decency as a human being and as nations that you deserve, to acknowledge the fact that there has been wounding and, you know, and to have restitution, to have some kind of ability to sit down and dialogue. And, you know, I pray that, you know, a leader in this nation will come along and be humble enough to formally apologize to the indigenous nations in North America so that we can begin to have a dialogue, to have a conversation that can help bring about healing collectively for everybody. And you know, when that happens, you know, rather than because still a lot of the history that's being taught in schools is completely inaccurate and does not depict the truth of the beautiful variety and diversity of indigenous nations. You know, it's just basically lumped into one rather than the 500 and plus nations that existed at the time when the visitors first arrived, you know, back in 1492. So, you know, this is the collective healing that has to take place individually, familially, as you just mentioned. You know, it's like we look and see, because now the intergenerational wounding is not necessarily externalized, it's internalized, you know, and we're all subject to that. And so it requires, I mean, healing is hard work. It's actually painful work. And, you know, the way that it was explained to me by the spirits is that at the moment when mystery merges with matter, then we come into human form. We become incarnate. And at that moment of incarnation, we are bequeathed two bundles. One is a burden bundle, and one is a blessing bundle. And inside the blessing bundle is all the gifts and attributes and talents of your families of origin, both maternal and paternal. On the other side is the burden bundle, And inside the burden bundle are all the fears, wounds, issues, traumas of your families of origin on both sides. And as we begin to grow, these bundles burst open. So we see the beauty that exists within our families, within our lineages. And we also simultaneously see the darkness that exists within this. And it's not about judgment, but it's about the truth, to see things as they are. And the time comes, perhaps, when that young person no longer wants to be the legacy holder of all this pain and suffering inside that burden bundle. So they begin to do the healing work through ceremony, through self-reflection, through assistance with, you know, from others, to begin to try to extract one or two items from that burden bundle. Because that burden bundle goes back to the beginning of our humanity. That's the DNA that that John Trudell talks about, the descendants and ancestors. And so it's not possible in one lifetime to be able to extract everything from that burden bundle. Because what's going to be most apparent is in your immediate environment. So this is the nature-nurture. It's both. It's not either-or. You know? So it's in the DNA, but it's also in your immediate environment. So, you know, maybe you're subjected to alcoholism or physical abuse or, you know, other forms of addiction. Who knows? But that's what's going to be in your immediate field to address and try to remediate. And so that a time will come when it's your turn to pass on those bundles by either having your own children or by being a mentor to others, because we're obviously affecting the bundles anyway because of interrelationship, that you want the burden bundle to be smaller and the blessing bundle to be bigger, right? And that way, then we have the collective healing that we're talking about, you know, and that requires ruthless honesty, and it requires perseverance and commitment, because healing is not comfortable, you know, and it's necessary, you know, for us to be able to liberate ourselves from the shackles of the suffering, you know, but it starts with ourselves. It starts with that first desire that you spoke of, you know, the intent to wish to heal and to walk down that journey and to reveal the truth and the beauty of who we are, but also the parts that require our attention and our refinement. You know, and that's what I see the gift of indigenous ceremony being, you know, whatever the ceremonies are, Purification Lodge, Uwipi, Sundance, Native American Church, all these, the plethora of powerful ceremonies that are available to us to be able to heal, to let go, to forgive, and to be liberated and to become free. You know, because I believe that freedom is our birthright and that we have the capacity to be free while we are in human form, and that freedom is an absence of concern for oneself. When you are no longer fixated on your ego or having your own specific desires or needs met, because you've replaced fear with faith in the source and the earth and the ancestors to provide everything that you need, and because you're in alignment with the dreamer's dream for you, then there is no place for fear. And that, for me, is true freedom.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, let's take a pause for the cause, 2 minutes, and we'll come back and wind things up, okay?
Very good. Thank you.
We'll be right back. Thank you.
which warns, when the gourd of ashes drops, you will know the end of the world is near. The Hopi elders believed the atom bomb to be that very gourd of ashes, for in 1948 they held a tribunal, appointing a guardian of their prophecies. Prophecies set in stone by distant ancestors and covered with the dust of time. The man chosen? Thomas Banyanka.
He's been here for a long time. They knew about destroying, but no one knew it was here.
Thomas Banyanka is the keeper of the carvings. It was he who uncovered the prophecies etched in stone after they lay hidden for many years.
So I wrapped this. So I was the one that cleaned this mess up and started a drawing. And I was so surprised.
Thomas Banyanka is one of several Hopi elders who is entrusted with the pre-Columbian prophecy that has a series of final warnings to be told to the world before what is called the Great Purification by Fire. Either it can be a fire of nuclear war and greenhouse global warming, or it can be a fire of inner consciousness.
In the Four Corners region of Arizona, the ancient Hopi prophecy rock looms, chronicling the destiny of mankind in Hopi hieroglyphics, leading towards what some fear is inevitable extinction.
This figure represents the great spirit or guardian of this land that we came on this earth, what we call now the Mother Earth.
In the first figure carved by the Hopi ancients, the great spirit or creator meets man. The creator then gave man the sacred circle, a promised life of peace and plenty if, and only if, man would follow the spiritual path. While the brown man waited, the white man traveled the earth on a mission to spread the spiritual circle and return with knowledge.
He was supposed to bring this, but instead he brought a symbol of a cross, they said. It's on here, cross.
Breaking away from the Native American people, the white man now traveled the path of materialism and invention, as shown by these three figures on the Rock of Prophecy.
I always say that first figure represents first invention, like wagon pulled by animals, and later the second one representing advancements in inventions. He brought automobiles that run by itself. Then the third one represents also advancements in inventions, scientific things, and now they have rode up in the sky.
With the invention of the aeroplane, the white man now commanded the land, sea, and sky. And just as the Hopi prophecy rock appears to predict, this thirst for power led to two devastating events, World War I and World War II.
There's a line down over here, and that's where we are today. And the zigzag line represents up there big nations, powerful nations, put their military might together and kill thousands of women, children, animals, birds. We have now come into last little circle above the line, which is, they said, maybe the beginning of Third World War.
And so, as the Hopi prophecy goes, we find ourselves at the crossroads with the fate of the entire race of man hanging on one all-important question. Do we return to the sacred circle and the life of harmony and abundance? Or do we take the jagged road, leading us further and further from the spiritual path?
If that...
I got cut short for some reason, but I think Dr. Mallard there, my old friend Ilya Kuryakin, he said mm-hmm. it pretty well. Not sure what happened to mm-hmm. the end of that. I got cut off, but... But yeah, I met Thomas back in just before Christmas in 1990, and very special man, very special guy. One of the first elders I met, and
I had the privilege of meeting with him as well. Yeah, very special man, very humble man. I really appreciate
the Blue Otter.
Humility.
Yeah.
You know, on that prophecy, Rocky mentioned the symbol of the cross is right where. creator's holding the reed, and it goes up the Sipapu, and it's just to the right of that. But that cross wasn't always there. What was there before was three dots in a triangle. And those three dots in that triangle have a lot of meanings. One of them, Blue Otter, relates to your birth, because those three dots written in a triangular fashion like that looks kind of like a pyramid, top dot and two below it. That's the Mayan number 22. That is, and day 22 in the Mayan Zolcan calendar is 9-8.
Oh, wow. Well, I share
that's
that
the
with
the day sign of Quetzalcoatl.
Quetzalcoatl, yeah.
So
yeah.
That's what's on that hop. That's what's on that Hopi prophecy rock. Also, though, those three dots in that pattern will also relate to the three stars forming a triangle in the constellation of Orion.
Right.
Which
yeah.
is a very important constellation, timing the almost every one of the Hopi ceremonies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know growing up as a kid, I was fascinated with astronomy. You know, I had but from the time I was 12 years old, that was my first hobby, and I'd spent a lot of time outside. The wintertime was the best. I lived in New York and on Long Island, and had some pretty good viewing, but I remember just looking at Orion a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I also saw lots of UFOs too. We'll go into that some other time, yeah. So, where do you think we stand, Chief Philip, right now, in light of what was said there?
Well, I believe that we're on a very fertile threshold. You know, in my travels around the world, speaking with other seers and dreamers. You know, all the prophecies from many indigenous cultures are coming true about this particular time that we're in. And either we are going to collectively awaken or we're going to cause our own demise and the demise of many species along with us. I mean, clearly the Earth is going to outlive us. She's seen several iterations of us come and go, and civilizations have risen and fallen throughout the span of planetary time. However, the difference is that it's time for us to understand that enlightenment is not a solitary affair, that it is a collective endeavor, and that each and every one, it's incumbent upon each and every one of us to do our work, to do our healing, and to come together in solidarity, to understand that the wheel is a way of life, embraces everyone, and that everyone has a right to be on it. And in fact, it brings a richness and a diversity to perspectives. You know, we tend to try to homogenize our relationships now and create adversarial ones rather than seeing that we're all in this together. You know, I mean, life and love are a risk. And I always encourage people and advocate that they fearlessly love and they fearlessly live, right? That they live with abandon, but they do not abandon themselves. And when we do that, you know, we're able to let go of the fears, which are just illusions anyway, that we can really love one another. And that's really the message for me. You know, this universe is bound by love. That's the glue and the adhesive that holds everything together. And, you know, the love, you know, the earth and the creator love us unconditionally. The ancestors love us unconditionally. And so therefore, inside our DNA, is the capacity for us to experience unconditional love. You know? As far as I'm concerned, there's four. You know, I spend a lot of time in deep reflection and in ceremony, and I ask the spirits, what's our purpose as human beings for being here? And they say there's four fundamental intentions or reasons for us here. And one is to wake up, to stop the domestication, to stop the autopilot, to stop the reactionary, knee-jerk actions, but for us to truly wake up, just as we, throughout all historical religious history, there are awakened ones in all traditions and faiths who have cut through the illusion of independence and who have liberated themselves from fear. So the first is to wake up. The second is to remember our original instructions. Because, as I said earlier, if we do not fulfill our original instructions, then all of us suffer. Not only the individual, but all of us collectively suffer. So, you know, it's part of our intent to be here is to remember what we're here to do for the benefit of all of our relations. Thirdly, which is by far the most challenging in our culture, in general now, is to love unconditionally. But because we have an experience of unconditional love through the earth, through the ancestors, through the Creator, and, you know, when I speak with most parents, they say they love their children unconditionally as well. And so there are exceptions, naturally, but for the most part, you know, parents love their children unconditionally, which means also inside our DNA and in the memories, both our energy bodies and our physical bodies, is an understanding experience of unconditional love. And unfortunately, as a result of society, that is bred out of us. And so, but that's really the key, is to love unconditionally. And the third is to live the interconnectivity of all of creation, so that we understand in every cell of our body that we are truly connected to everything else. And for me, these four aspects of our remembrance as human beings allows us to live in a very different way. And we can, you know, learn to love unconditionally, live unconditionally, support each other, take care of each other. Because if we don't, the consequence of this forgetting is exactly the annihilation of our species and many other species along with us. And I see that as a tragedy. But I do believe, you know, it depends on the day. Certain days, you know, I think that perhaps we're beyond, you know, the ability to redeem ourselves. And other days, I think that, you know, based upon the actions that I see, there's a glimmer of possibility for us. And, you know, my intent is always to see the latter, that I do, I believe in the intrinsic goodness of human beings. I think we become sometimes self-absorbed, both individually and as a species. And so that's part of our responsibility, too, is to wake up to that so that we can be generous and honorable and good toward ourselves and toward each other, so that we obviously learn to love and respect, trust ourselves, trust each other, you know, and to allow the goodness of our humanity to emerge. And so that's what I see and what I believe, you know, so that rather than to fall into the abyss, you know, and to create annihilation for ourselves and others, that we can wake up and work for the betterment of ourselves and each other.
Yeah.
Well, as Jack Nicholson said in Mars Attacks, why can't we all just get along? You know, you know, it makes me wonder what it's going to take.
It's going to take a revolution. It's going to take a revolution. You know, and it's not a revolution of violence. It's actually a revolution of peace and love, you know, toward ourselves and toward each other. And that's the hard work of healing that I spoke of earlier. But I believe that it's possible. You know, it's not going to be easy. You know, it may not, I mean, I don't want to put any label on it whatsoever. In fact, there's a beautiful quotation that says in the Dharma of Buddhism, right, pray that the Buddha does not regard the path as difficult, otherwise sentient beings will suffer. Say rather that the Buddha regards the path as easy, so sentient beings will be liberated. You know? As we know, our thoughts will shape our experience. Right? I don't believe that we create our own reality. I think the dreamer is dreaming our reality for us. However, what I do believe is that our thoughts serve as the capacity for us to experience the world. So if we have a very narrow bandwidth of thinking, then we cannot experience the plenitude of creation. Whereas if we have a much more expanded thought process and perception, then we're able to take in much more of the vastness of this beautiful creation that we're all blessed to experience.
Good, real good description.
Well, it sure is. It sure is. Well, want to thank you for joining us, and I think you're onto something. I think you've really been blessed by Creator to be a spokesman. I mean, you're doing a real good job from both directions, being a shadow walker, you know, because you're the man in the middle.
Oh, thank you for that. I appreciate your acknowledgement. And it's an honor to be on your show. I'd certainly love to be back again. It's a very fruitful dialogue, and I've learned quite a bit also from listening to both of you and to the caller as well. So, and that's what it's about. It's really about sharing and talking story, and you know, and I think that's the momentum that we start to build, is when we can share our story and our experiences, because it's all unique, you know, and so we can celebrate our lives together and celebrate the beauty and the richness and the goodness of this gorgeous earth that we are a part of, and this mystery that the ancestors who always walk with us step by step, breath for breath, they're always there. Oftentimes we neglect them, but they never abandon us, but we may abandon them because we're not aware of their presence. So that's also part of the work that I do, is to ensure that people understand that they can cultivate a relationship with the spirits that is an abiding one, and that they can walk with them for the rest of their lives, that the earth is kissing our feet every step we take, that the Creator is inspiring us every breath that we take, and that we're never alone. We're born into relationship, not only to the earth, the ancestors and the Creator, but we are born into relationship with all of the plants and the animals, the elementals, and with each other. And there is a richness there. That's the mirror of reflection that can allow us to see who we really are. It's through relationship. That's why these relationships come into our lives. The Creator will dream individuals to come in, because, you know, I believe the Creator and the ancestors have a wicked sense of humor. So they're going to bring characters into your life, into your movie, that will help you to learn and to grow, you know. Yeah. And sometimes those are the tyrants, those are the teachers, and so we get a chance to. Now, recently, some of my students, a community, saying, you know, I thought I was already healed. I thought this was all figured out. I said, no, this is excavation. We're going deeper. Right, and we continue to reveal more of the treasure by looking at the things that we have to let go of, what we have to release, what we have to heal. And so we celebrate these opportunities when a tyrant comes into our life in the form of a teacher or a friend or a parent or a family member or perhaps even an acquaintance. And then, you know, that's the gift that the Creator is bringing for us to look at ourselves. You know, one of my mentors, wonderful storyteller. She was Haudenosaunee from Six Nation, and Paula Underwood was her name. You know, beautiful storyteller and educator. And she would often say, "What may I learn from this?" That was her inquiry. What may I learn from this? So regardless of whatever transpired in her life, she was always reflecting upon the meaning, right? That it was not accidental, right? That these souls enter into our lives for a reason, to serve as mirrors of reflection, which is also why, unfortunately, 60% of all marriages in this country end in divorce now, because I don't believe that people understand what the medicine of marriage is really about, which is, you know, for an individual to serve as a mirror of reflection for another, you know, to say, I'm here so that you can see yourself, to see your beauty, and to see the parts of yourself that require a little attention, a little loving attention. And so, you know, when the romance fades or wears off and the work really begins, that's when people want to bail, because they're not willing to see that relationship is the gift that they're asking for, that soul says, I will be here, I'll walk with you for the rest of your journey here, so that you have a mirror to help you heal and to grow so that we can do magic together. And unfortunately,
yeah.
I think that's forgotten in our society. And so I believe that we're magical beings in a magical world. And we have the ability to communicate in ways that are unseen. You know, and we are constantly bombarded with signs and omens from the spirits to keep us on track and in course in our life, but we often overlook them or are blind to them. You know, and so we really need to start to wake up and see the truth of who we are, see the illusions that we're operating with, so that we can free ourselves from them, because then the world will be a different place. You know, and it's not necessarily about going back to the halcyon days of the way things were. I think it's about balance. You know, it's about being in this world now to see how we can use technologies in all ways for the benefit of the good. Right? I'm not attached. It's just like Rolling Thunder. You're not attached to whether it's, you know, an MRI or whether it's the rattle of a medicine man or medicine woman. What matters is if it can work in helping to relieve suffering. Right? So I'm not attached to the form of things. That was certainly one of the first things that my first medicine, my root medicine teacher told me, is not to get attached to form. Right? Because we can't be attached to form, because eventually our body will return to the earth. Right? And so it's about being able to utilize everything that's available to bring healing and purification to ourselves individually and collectively. And that's the beauty of the work I feel that I'm blessed to do, and to maintain and preserve traditional practices. You know, I don't believe it's necessary to recreate the wheel. The wheel has already been created. These ceremonies are thousands upon thousands of years old. I don't need to embellish them. I don't need to add anything to them. You know, in the when we load that sacred pipe, that Tanupa Wakan, as it's called in Lakota, you know, there's a song, Kola Leche Lechue, friend, do it this way. Do it this way and the ancestors will honor you. So you know, when I sit down and I pray and I load the Tanupa the way that it was been taught and handed down through the years and through the lineages that I'm familiar with, I'm connecting to the original source, to the original person, to White Buffalo Cathleman herself. But if we feel compelled to try to create things on our own or to make things up ceremonially, I think that's very dangerous. You know, I believe that, for me, this is a medicine way. The Native American church is a medicine way. The Sun Dance is a medicine way. These are the ancient medicines that are thousands upon thousands of years old, and they're time-tested. And so when we're not sanctioned or taught properly, then negligence can result. I mean, I'm also an EMT, and so you know, I bridge both worlds. You know, I do modern allopathic medicine as an EMT, and I also practice traditional indigenous medicine. And so for me, I espouse collaborative medicine. That's very important. But we respect each lineage. So I'm not going to try to be drumming while I'm, as an EMT. It's like it's about respecting each lineage and not trying to amalgamate them and trademark it into something that it's not. And I think that's the danger today is that people are looking for shortcuts. They're looking for ways to try to circumvent the medicine. But, we know that in allopathic medicine, it will require about 10 years of training. You got 4 years in school, and you got your rotations and your residencies before you are a bona fide physician. Well, unfortunately, I think many people in the Western world don't comprehend that in the Native way as well, there are protocols, very stringent, elaborate protocols. And for those that know the Native American church, for example, you have different fireplaces. And so each of them have their protocols, and you have to be properly trained and qualified. And when you're not, that's when harm can result. And I think about what happened in Sedona, Arizona, for example, with that individual who certainly was not qualified to conduct a lodge. and people perished as a result of that level of negligence and ignorance. And so that's the patience that is required in order to train. You know, you find yourself a medicine person who you trust and who you respect, and you apprentice with them, and you do the necessary work. And it's hard work, and it's, you know, it's blood, sweat, and tears. And literally, you know, you may have to put your life on the line constantly. And that's the training that is required to be able to shuttle souls back and forth from one world to the next. You know, so that you intimately acquaint yourself with the with your own personal death, so you're not attached to it, and also know how to be of service. And so, you know, it requires, you know, and I've, again, in my travels throughout the world, speaking with other medicine people who train others, apprentices, you know, there's a consensus that it takes about 10 years of training to really be qualified and sanctioned and bona fide in the indigenous medicine way, you know, and, you know, because it's a very comprehensive medicine practice. You know, it's, you know, uses, so not only body work and plant medicines, but knowing the ceremonies, the sacred songs, all of the subtle protocols, you know, requires training and time. In order for you to become a water pour, you know, in the purification lodge, or Inipi, as it's called in Lakota, you know, one needs to make a commitment in Sundance for 4 or 5 years, and or go on the hill to do a traditional Humblecha vision quest for 4 or 5 years. You know, so you walk the preliminary cycle of the wheel, right? But all the old timers I knew say you can't even regard yourself as a Sun Dancer until you've completed at least 16 years. So 4 by 4, 4 years in each direction. You know, so that's the kind of patience that is required to walk this native way. More and more in this fast-paced world, it makes it very difficult to find people that are willing to have the patience and take the commitment and the time to be able to understand the subtle mysteries that can only be learned through that level of perseverance and patience and practice.
Hey, we're running out of stream, so we better run.
All right. Well, thank you very much for listening. It's been an absolute
you bet.
Honor.
You bet. Yeah, how far over 80 did you say you were?
Well, yeah, if any of your listeners would like to get in touch with me, if I can be of service to them, I'm available. They can email me, Philip, PHILLIP, at ancestralvoice.org, ancestralvoice.org, and they can also call me at 415-310-0981, 415-310-0981. And I am on call 24/7. I'm always available to support people in the healing process or to field any other questions they may have.
I mean, a man of great wisdom. Like I said, you talk like somebody over 80, and so you've got that kind of wisdom at this age. Wow, you're going to have quite a run. Well, thanks a lot. Talk to you soon.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. Many blessings to you, and happy Resurrection Day. May that we all be resurrected. All right. Take care.
Good night, everybody.
Aho, mataka.
Join us to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. Friends, this is your co-host, Will Blue Otter. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Blue Otter, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so,
Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
Remember.